Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with BiteClear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. BiteClear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
The Bears Talk Underground is brought to you by our friends at BetOnline. BetOnline knows you might not be able to get out to a game this year, but you can still get in on the action at BetOnline. BetOnline is going the extra mile to make sure you can get in on everything imaginable this season. From game spreads and totals to team player and coaching props, BetOnline gives you more options to wager than any place online. Head on over to BetOnline today and use promo code ARMCHAIR to take advantage of all the great sign-up bonuses. BetOnline, your online sportsbook experts. What's up, guys? Now with the Green Bay game finally in our rearview, that game that we'd all been dreading for so long, and for it to be almost as big a disaster as we thought it was going to be. I mean, it was bad, but not the 55-14, just destruction that we were expecting with the way that we've been playing lately. Thankfully, that game is gone, and the next four games that we have against the Lions, the Texans, the Vikings, and the Jaguars are winnable games. Does that mean we're going to win them? No. No, it doesn't. Doesn't mean we're going to win them. It means that we can and that there's a reasonable expectation of victory in these games, which has not been a reasonable expectation for four out of the five games that we've just finished losing. We should have beaten Minnesota, or at least we were expected to. The other four games we were expected to lose, and we did, and in some ways in spectacular fashion. Jeremy Reisman has come back to the show to help us preview this Week 13 matchup between the Bears and the Lions. The Bears looking for a season sweep, looking to even out our division record at 2-2, because we got the 1-0 start against the Lions Week 1, and then we've lost to Minnesota and Green Bay in back-to-back division games to fall to 1-2. This gets us back to 500, and maybe we can either get a winning division in the record or at least get a 500 when we maybe even the score with the Vikings before we get killed by Green Bay in the season finale. So, nonetheless, interesting conversation between myself and Jeremy. A lot of talk about the state of our franchises. Didn't really talk much about the game because why would we? Really, honestly, why would we talk much about the game? We did sprinkle some of that in there, but for the most part, talking about the woes of our franchises and what to look forward to going forward. So if anything, it was kind of like almost like we had our off-season discussion now as opposed to having it later in the year. But always fun to have Jeremy on the show. Love talking to him, and he's one of those guys that's been with me from the start when I branched out and started having guests on the show during the 2015 season. And so as I like to say, despite his unfortunate allegiance to the Lions, he's one of my favorite guys to talk to. So let's go ahead and get into it. It's the Week 13 preview episode of the Bears Talk Underground with myself and Jeremy Reisman getting you ready for Bears Lions on Sunday. Lucky week number 13 has our beloved returning home to Soldier Field and hosting the Detroit Lions. And, it's going to be an interesting game on Sunday because we've got two very desperate teams on healthy losing streaks looking for redemption at this point. And here to help us talk about this football game, as usual, our good friend from Pride of Detroit, it is Jeremy Reisman. Jeremy, welcome back, man.
Thanks for having me, Larry. Always good to hear from you.
Yeah. We were talking briefly before we got started here, and, the Bears are only one game better than the Lions in the standings right now, 5-6 over 4-7. And if not for DeAndre Swift, that would be reversed, actually. We'd be the 4-7 team, and you'd be the 5-6 football team. I don't think that would have saved Matt Patricia's job, or do you think it would have?
No. I mean, okay. It's only a matter of time. Given the rest of the Lions' schedule beyond this week, things are probably only going to get worse.
And yeah, so, I just looked at it, yeah.
Yeah, maybe he would have survived Thanksgiving, but he would not have survived New Year's.
Yeah. Yeah, or hell, maybe he might not have survived this weekend, you know.
Yeah.
You lose to a team, you know, and all that kind of stuff, and depending on how you lose and whatnot. But, yeah, Thanksgiving Day was bad. Thanksgiving Day was bad, and, you know, Watson kind of rolled you guys up, and, you know, the interception at the line of scrimmage for J.J. Watt got things kicked off and things. That was, yeah, it wasn't a pretty showing. But that's 2020 for you, man. I was listening to the Rich Eisen show yesterday and listening to Billy Gardell, the actor, from Mike and Molly and whatnot, and he was like 4-3-7 teams on Thanksgiving Day is about as 2020 as you can get, and that's what we got on Thursday was 4-3-7 teams on national TV, no less, playing football.
My favorite part of that day was the Cowboys in their press release. Like their game recap that they give to the press before games, like they took a really, I don't know, unexplained shot at the Lions. Like, yeah, the Lions are really bad on Thanksgiving, but us, you know, the Cowboys, we're really America's team, and why everyone likes to sit down and watch, and they're the real show on Thanksgiving. And then both teams get, you know, get 40 hung on them and lose by like 3 scores. And like, oh yeah, you're the real show in town now. You guys have won 3 playoff games in 2.5 decades. Don't talk to me.
Yeah. it's always funny when they do stuff like that, when they try to polish the turd that is their team in 2020, and how wonderful the Mike McCarthy experiment is going right now, when they've spent half the season trying to tell the public that he's not on the hot seat for how poorly this is going, you know. Like, if Jason Garrett was still the coach of this team, we might not be a great team, but I'm certain we probably wouldn't be in as big a hole as we're in. You know, to be 4-7 and leading a division is sad, you know. And the Cowboys are 3-8 in last place of the worst division in football this year, and they've got the balls to take shots at people.
Right?
It's like that's pretty bad. That's pretty bad. So let's talk briefly about week one, and I don't mean to do this because I'm trying to rub it in. I just, you know, that is kind of where it all began to fall apart for Patricia, because then the stats of how many games that guy's been head coach, how many leads he's given up to that point, that's where that all kind of came to the forefront. It's a game you guys should have won if not for DeAndre Swift making a rookie mistake in a key situation. You know, it was a game you guys should have won despite Mitch's heroics in the fourth quarter, because he was god-awful for the first 3 quarters. Jeremy, I was in a sports bar because for some reason they weren't carrying the game in my market for whatever reason. So I had to go out and watch the game, and here I am in public cursing my life because this is my team. And he was as bad as he could have been, and this is what we wait.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and 3-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
We are driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/match. Just go to Indeed.com/match right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/match. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? you need Indeed.
All season four, and this is the guy that beat out Nick Foles, and I wanted him pulled at halftime. Like, I don't even want to see this anymore. I just sat through 2019 watching him struggle and get it wrong and make the wrong reads, make the wrong throw, you know, over and over again. He's doing it again. I don't want to do this. I just have no patience for it. And then the fourth quarter happened. I'm like, great. Now we got to stick with him because he figured it out in the fourth quarter, but we still should have lost the game. And that's also kind of where the whole yeah, but thing got started with the Bears. It's like, yeah, we're 1-0, but if not for DeAndre Swift, we'd be 0-1 and we deserve to be.
Yeah. I mean, that game actually kind of played out a lot like the Thanksgiving game last year, where in the first half, we were all talking about how David Blau was out dueling Mitchell Trubisky. And then of course you look at the final stat line and Mitchell Trubisky threw out 340 yards, 3 touchdowns in that game. And he always seems to do that. I feel like he does that a lot in general, but he certainly does it almost every single time he plays the Lions, where the first half you're like, oh yeah, this is a Mitchell Trubisky that we see every other week of the season. And then for some reason, something happens in that second half, usually the fourth quarter, and he's just Superman. And granted, basically every single quarterback that's played the Lions defense this year has had that kind of half or that kind of quarter, or maybe sometimes the entire game, like Deshaun Watson had. But it's extra frustrating when it's Mitchell Trubisky. Really, sure. For both sides, it kind of sounds like
yeah.
It's obviously frustrating from a Lions perspective that this is the only team that Trubisky can play well against. And it seems like it's frustrating from the Bears side, where it's just like every single time he faces the Lions, he gives you guys a little bit of hope. And then the following week, you come back to reality.
Yeah, I mean, the funny thing was is that against the following week against the Giants, he picked up where he left off. He took his stellar fourth quarter and had a solid first half against the Giants. He was something like 11 of 13. He threw 2 touchdown passes. We're up 17-3 at halftime. And then in the second half, it went off a cliff. And we didn't score in the third quarter, which has been an ugly, ugly trend the Bears have continued throughout the season. We've scored twice all season in the third quarter, twice. Hmm. And one of those was Cordero's kickoff return against the Vikings on Monday Night Football. So we've had one touchdown drive, just actually one scoring drive, period, in the third quarter in 11 games. One. Wow. One scoring drive in the third quarter. The other was a kickoff return. For a touchdown to start the second half. So, I mean, we've been absolutely god-awful in the third quarter. My favorite stat line of the year, and it'll sound funny because I'm calling it my favorite, but after we did that kickoff return, 3 drives, 9 plays, -5 yards in that third quarter against the Vikings.
It's funny. The Lions last year had an issue with the third quarter, and it was mostly defensively speaking. They would just implode in the third quarter. We grew to call it the turd quarter, and so I will pass that off to you guys. You're free to use it this year.
Okay.
It's now the turd quarter for you guys.
The turd quarter, great. I will use that for the rest of the season, I swear to God, because that's exactly what it is. And, you know, the thing that's made this 5-game losing streak even more unbearable is that the effort has gotten worse each of those 5 weeks. You know, like the Monday night game against the Rams, that kind of kicked things off with this losing streak. That was just, at the time, looked upon, that was a bad night. Neither the offense nor the defense played well. We were, you know, Ted Ginn, that's where he ended his career as our punt returner, literally watching the ball fly everywhere, staying as far away from it as he possibly could. Like, you know, and we replaced him the week after. Then against the Saints, we made a decent effort. Took it to overtime, had to do the fourth quarter thing to force overtime, and then blew like 3 turnover opportunities in overtime to let the Saints make the winning score. And then the following week against the Titans, that's where things started circling the bowl. You know, the offense did not show up until garbage time when the game was well decided before they scored some points. The week after against Minnesota was even worse on national television. Then we get 2 weeks to figure it out and try to make some kind of effort. We're bringing Mitch back. This should maybe put a shot in the arm with the offense. Outside of the first drive of the game, everything else was what we expected it to be, and the Packers absolutely murdered us. The defense had the bad game that they were due for because they were absolute soldiers in that 4-game losing streak. Like, they gave an effort. We should have won every game with the effort that the defense gave us in that 4-game losing streak, and then they finally fell flat on their faces against Green Bay, and then Mitch was Mitch for 99% of that game, and it was just an utter embarrassment. Like, each effort has gotten worse as we've gone along. So it's not like we're you know, one of those scrappy teams that just can't quite get over the hump and get a win. It's like we're literally handing the game over week in and week out.
Yeah, and that's kind of the viewpoint from the outside looking in too, is
yeah,
you guys were just kind of holding on to dear life at that with that 4-0 start, and you know, Bears fans were obviously excited at the time, because why wouldn't you be excited at 4-0? But you know, we were talking off air, and you said, you know, everyone was like, yeah, but it's coming. And then you hit, and to be fair to the Bears, like, that was a bit of a gauntlet of a schedule that you guys just went through.
Rams, oh, for sure.
Saints, Titans, Vikings, yeah. Packers. Like, that's not an easy stretch. But I think a lot of people thought, like, yeah, that's going to be tough for them, especially with the way they're playing offensively.
Right.
And turns out, yeah, it was pretty tough for them.
Yeah, so I mean, it's like when the schedule came out, even, you know, with all of the unknowns with that team, it's like, well, we got Detroit at home. That's usually a victory. Or excuse me, on the road. It's like, and we've been playing well against Detroit. That's, Detroit is, their Achilles heel is Mitch Trubisky. So we'll see how that goes week one. Then week two, the Giants, terrible football team. That should be a win. Week three against Atlanta was actually the first question mark on the schedule, because I didn't know which Falcon team we were going to get. I didn't know if we were going to get the team that started 1-7 or that finished 2-6 finished 6-2 last year. And we got both. We got the 6-2 team for the first three quarters, and then the 1-7 team in the fourth quarter that let us come back and win. And then the Colts, it was like, well, the Colts were like the 2019 were the AFC version of the Bears in 2019. This team that had a great season in 2018, kind of overachieved, went to the playoffs, did some things, and then in 2019 expectations were high and they went absolutely nowhere. So yeah. And then the Colts came in and they ragdolled us, week four. So we were 3-0, and then lost the first game 3-1. And then Tom Brady comes to town, Thursday Night Football, then the Buccaneers are supposed to massacre us, and we ended up beating them. And that was like the first time that I felt like our win-loss record might actually be legit.
Right.
Because the Buccaneers are supposed to be like the class of the NFC this year with this super team that Arians and Brady have put together and all that kind of stuff. And we took their best shot in the first quarter. They went up 13-0 on us. We came and took the lead right before halftime. We battled them throughout the second half. We kicked the game-winning field goal, and then we stopped Brady short on his comeback drive to win the football game. That was a great win for the Bears. And, 4-1, then we followed up. We win our last game against Carolina, which was not a pretty win, but we won nonetheless. And then it was like, okay, well, it's like we as Bear fans know we got a decent team on our hands, especially with our defense. Now we got the Rams, the Saints, the Titans. We're going to know what kind of team we have at the end of 3 weeks. And the answer that we got is not the one that we were hoping for. It just cascaded and got even worse. And the Vikings were supposed to be our respite. That was supposed to be where we bounce back and get a win on the board before we go into the bye and get ready for Green Bay. Like, we should really be a 6-5 team, not 5-6. We should have beaten Minnesota, even though nothing we did that day, aside from the defense, shows that we should have won. But it's just like, as far as like who the better team was coming in, we should have won that game and everything. Like, we should have lost every single one of those games against New Orleans. And New Orleans was the only team that we should have won, because we had our chances in overtime. But,
yep.
Overall, we deserve the record that we have because of the way that we're playing on offense, because of the way that Nagy has set up, our offense to basically fail on just about every play. And I've listened to guys talk about breaking down the All-22, and all I hear about is that basically on just about every single play, the Bears are at a disadvantage if you're talking about the numbers in the running game or who's on the field versus who the defense has and all that kind of stuff. It just makes you wonder what the hell Nagy and now Bill Lazor are doing out there, because it's like nothing has changed. Nothing has changed. And it's like, do you guys want to get fired? Is that what's going on? Because you're not doing anything to give us an advantage out there on the field. That huge run from David Montgomery to start the first quarter, That was where we had numbers in our favor. We had a matchup we were looking for. We exploited it, and then it basically just stopped after that. Yeah. And every other one was we were at some kind of disadvantage. We got guys in coverage when they should be up at the line of scrimmage, maybe blocking and all the rest of that stuff, man. And I know that, you know, and I haven't heard that much about like what went wrong with the Lions. Was that more of a mutiny, like the players just not playing well, or was he doing something similar and putting the players in positions to fail and you know, not come up with the results that you're looking for?
I mean, honestly, I think it was just a failure on every single level. I don't think it was necessarily one thing. I don't think it was the players giving up. I don't think it was necessarily bad scheme. It was literally a little bit of everything. The defensive roster is a mess, and it's going to be even more of a mess this week with a couple more guys on IR as of today. There's a certain amount of stubbornness both on offense and defense. When Patricia was here, the Lions played a lot of cover one man coverage. On defense, didn't like to send a lot of blitzes, consistently one of the least blitzing teams under Matt Patricia, and they don't have a pure pass rusher on their roster. So put that all together, and defensively, there was just no coherent game plan with the talent that they had. Offensively, they would always get too conservative, which is why you saw them blow all those leads that they did this year. And so the one thing I will say is I don't think he lost the locker room at any sort of point. You know, say what you will about all the former players that came out and
oh
basically
my God,
just,
yeah,
you know, pissed on his grave, so to speak.
Yeah.
But the guys that are there right now, and part of it is just like he got a bunch of Patriots guys that already loved him. But I didn't see a lot of, you know, lack of effort type of things out there in the field. Just the talent wasn't there, the scheme wasn't right, and it just wasn't working, period.
Yeah, I mean, I've never seen that before, with the way that that players, ex-players, and such were using social media to attack their former head coach like that. I mean, you know, you talk about the players that are there; those are his guys, and there was no lack of effort or any kind of mutiny there. But the players that he got rid of,
yeah,
it was like an ugly breakup on just about every single level with all of those guys. For all of them to come out like that independently and, you know, take subtle shots. Some of them were kind of backhanded, you know, weren't really coming out and saying it, but we all knew what they were saying. And some of them were just flat out coming out and saying, you know, to hell with this guy. He said he was going to end my career. Well, it looks like they had other plans and,
right,
you know, all that kind of stuff. I mean, that was shocking to me to see that, for the guys to, you know, because every other team in the league saw that as well. It's like, is this a guy I want to have on my team that's going to do this and you know, this displeasure kind of thing with the, you know, if something doesn't go his way or whatever? It's a risk those guys are taking, but they dislike Patricia so much they didn't care.
Yeah, and make no bones about it. Like, that first year that he was here, 2018, absolute disaster. I mean, it just so happened to be his best year record-wise. They went 6-10, but the locker room was just a mess from really from training camp is when we first started to hear things like they're focusing too much on, you know, getting in shape and not that that's necessarily a bad thing, but it's just everything was overthrown. And I think by design, I think Matt Patricia wanted to overthrow the culture there. He wanted to be more serious and all that sort of stuff. And for a roster that's just coming off of Jim Caldwell, like the nicest person in the world, the most players coach that you could ever get, it was just so, you know, it was a complete 180. And again, by design for what Matt Patricia wanted to do, but it rubbed a lot of people the wrong way. And he went about it the wrong way. He insulted players on the field, used colorful language that probably didn't deserve to be said to some, you know, some leaders on the team, some Darius Slay, Glover Quinn, Quandre Diggs are all guys that at some point, you know, there was a rumor that he trashed. Like, he trashed publicly on the field in meeting rooms. And when you do that to the leaders, the whole, like, you, if you're, you know, coming into a new roster, a new culture, you got to go to the leaders of that team and pull them aside and get them on your side.
Yeah.
You don't go attacking them right away and be like, oh, you're a leader on this team? I don't think so. I'm the leader. You suck. And then a year later, they're all gone. You've either ostracized Darius Slay to a point where he's demanding a trade by the end of your second year. You've already traded away Quandre Diggs, a captain and a fan favorite. Glover Quinn went and retired because he didn't want to deal with your crap. I mean, suddenly the reason why this team is so bereft of talent on the defensive side of the ball is like, oh yeah, because you ran out everyone good, and then you decided the only players that have, you know, the mental fortitude of your kind of style is former Patriots. And when you limit yourself to former Patriots, well, guess what? You're not going to have the cream of the crop, because the Patriots keep the cream of the crop. And then you're left with, you know, a guy like Trey Flowers is good, but probably not $90 million worth.
Yeah.
You get a guy like Danny Shelton, who's good, but probably not your full-time starter good. And so, I mean, that's really what happened in a nutshell. He ostracized everyone in year one. He did get better in year two, and in year three, he was certainly more of, I think, a cohesive force. But overall, in the end, it was too little too late. And by the time the culture was good, he had already just carpet bombed the roster in terms of talent. And we are where we are now.
Yeah. And I fear the Bears aren't far behind you as far as new regime and everything. I honestly do. I think that we're in line for a change. It's just that I don't think the change that we really need is going to be coming, as far as like the people above Pace and Nagy being reshuffled or retooled or, you know, reallocated. Because ask any Bears fan. That's the change that we really want. It's like, obviously we want something different. Nagy hasn't worked out. He had the first year shine, but that's, you know, all gone now. Whatever Nagy did in 2018 that worked so well has been figured out and is being exploited week in and week out. Now the lack of dedication to fixing, like, or you know, having talent on the offensive line, spending all the money on the defense. Money well spent, because we have a great defense, but, you know, we got nothing going on offense. We picked the wrong guy at quarterback, and I still contest we shouldn't have picked one to begin with. Mm-hmm. These guys have their resume, especially over the last few years, is not one that you could support 2021 for either of them at this point. But, you know, we'll see what the McCaskies want to do. They're not like some other teams that have the stones to admit their mistakes mid-season and, you know, kind of show everyone, all right, we're in transition now. We're going to do what we can with the rest of the season and then start over when the off season. And we're doing this to kind of get the inside track on whoever's available, or so we can get to work on finding, you know, that person that's going to help us out. You know, the Bears are going to wait till the last minute to do it. And we'll see how that all goes. But I fear that we'll be looking at regime change. And as long as you still have the same people making those hires, I don't know if that's a good thing or not.
Yeah.
So,
well, certainly know what that feels like with the Fords. And you know, this will be Sheila Ford Hamp's first crack at it, as she's only been on the job for 4 or 5 months. But
yeah,
there's definitely the same kind of just consternation of like, I mean, first of all, you're doing it as, you know, you just took the owner seat, and now you have to basically build this franchise up from the beginning. But, you know, obviously the job that her predecessors have done, whether it's her mother, Martha Ford, or William Clay Ford before her, obviously the results speak for themselves. Let's just put it that way.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, does she have any kind of football background, or? Because we essentially have an economist or an accountant running the organization in Ted Phillips. That's what he does. And yet we've got him running a football team, making football decisions. And I think, wow, like, I don't think necessarily people want Ted Phillips fired or anything like that. But I think that we definitely want Ted Phillips not making football decisions anymore. That's not what he's qualified to do, and that's what he has been doing from the beginning. So is your new owner or your new inherited owner, does she have any kind of football background? Is she qualified to make these decisions, or is she just simply doing the job because that's what she's got?
I mean, it's kind of amazing what you just said, because the team president, Rod Wood, is an economist who was hired Great. To just take care of the financial side of the franchise. And guess what he's also been doing?
Making football decisions.
Making football decisions. He's been sitting in on head coaching interviews. He kind of spearheaded the GM search for Bob Quinn 5 years ago. And so, yeah, it's very much a similar thing. And some people were calling for Bob Quinn to get, for Rod Wood, the team president, to get fired along with everyone else this past week. And it didn't happen. And it certainly sounds like him and Sheila Fordhamp, who, to be clear, she's always followed the team since, mm-hmm. you know, her parents have owned the team. When Martha took over five, six years ago, she was right there behind her. So she's at least been there, involved at least a little bit. And she was actually somewhat involved in the decision to keep Matt Patricia for another year going into 2020. And so that can either be a strike for her or against her, depending on your outlook there. But I would say my own personal confidence in those two getting the job done is low. Yeah. Is very low. And I do want to give Sheila Fordhamp a fair shot. I'm not going to bury her before she's, you know, made any sort of moves other than firing the two people that absolutely needed to get fired. But, you know, I sat in on her press conference on Saturday, the day that they made the move, and she basically sounded like she didn't have a plan yet. And that's fine. Like, she doesn't have to give me all the answers of what the process is going to be. And basically her message was, we're going to leave no stone unturned, uncovered, whatever. But I didn't hear a cognizant plan. I didn't hear, you know, a direction in which you wanted to take the search. And so to me, it's just like, all right, let's just hope they, you know, let's hope the broken clock is right this time. Because I mean, there's just not a lot of confidence to have in this group that, you know, basically messed things up 5 years ago. And you just hope that Rod Wood, the team president, has learned in those 5 years. But I'm not sure if there's anything tangentially that I've seen so far that would give me that kind of hope. So consider me in the group where I'm just like, okay, yeah, they got the job done in terms of getting rid of the people that they wanted, but I don't like restarting, and I certainly don't like restarting a franchise with someone who just got on the job. That is terrifying to me. And so I don't know. I'm not feeling very optimistic about the future right now. And I certainly know that even if they do get the right hire at GM, even if they get the right hire as the new head coach, this isn't a short-term project. This is probably going to take a couple of years, which means another couple bad seasons, which, I mean, we just got rid of, we were just at 9-7. It seems like yesterday.
Oh man. And preaching to the choir, bro.
It's going to be 4 or 5 years from then until we potentially get back there. And so, It's frustrating.
Yeah, I mean, this is like Lovey all over again, where it's just like, at the time, it kind of made sense that, you know, we've gotten to a point and we can't seem to get over the hump with Lovey. Like, we can play well. We were competitive in the division basically the entire time Lovey was the head coach, all 9 years. We were in the mix. We were, you know, competitive. We couldn't get over the hump with the Packers. I mean, that's been basically every Bears head coach's problem for the last 25, 30 years. But, you know, we were always going back and forth with the Lions and the Vikings. We're, you know, kind of always playing well and justifying his return. Nobody argued with Lovey coming back or anything like that. Then you start 7-1, but you finish 10-6. You miss out on the playoffs. And, you know, I didn't want to see Lovey go, but I was like, I think it is time for someone else to try.
Yep.
And I kind of did it in the vein of Tony Dungy getting fired in lieu of John Gruden. Like, Tony Dungy took the Buccaneers from squalor to actually being a legitimate football team, to being a respected team, but couldn't quite get them over the hump to the Super Bowl. And John Gruden not only got him there, but he won it. I was thinking maybe the Bears were in that kind of mold, like Tony, you know, Lovie Smith got us so far. He gets us to the playoffs or to the brink of the playoffs. We've been, you know, a much better football team than we were when he took over in 2004. We're better off now than we were when he started. But I think it's time for someone else to take the mantle, maybe get us over the top. And that's apparently where things went wrong. You know, like getting rid of Lovie was the wrong thing to do, especially for the guy that we got rid of him for. And, you know, Phil Emery screwed that up. But it's like, he's a GM. He wanted to make his coaching change or whatever. So he did. and that didn't work out, and it cost him his job. But, you know, that's not an issue you're going to have to deal with in Detroit because both of them are gone. So it's not like a GM came in and now he's going to hire his guy and we'll go forward from there. You're starting with a clean slate here, and in a way that's exciting. And like you said, it's completely terrifying all at the same time.
Yeah. I mean, what you described sounds to me exactly like what happened with the transition from Caldwell to Patricia. You know, Bob Quinn was in there, wanted to get his guy as a head coach. He held on to Caldwell for 2 years because Caldwell basically made it impossible for him to fire him in that first year when they went 9-7, made the playoffs, made it tough for him again, going 9-7 the following year, didn't make the playoffs. But I think the way that season ended, it was the opportunity that Bob Quinn had to really bring in the guy that he wanted all along, a guy he was comfortable with, had worked with before. And basically that was the beginning of the end for Bob Quinn. You know, he made that decision to move on from Jim Caldwell, one of the best coaches the Lions have ever had, which is probably says more about the Lions than it does Caldwell. But but yeah, I that was kind of sealing his own fate by bringing in his own guy and you know, rebooting the franchise and his image and Patricia's image. And three years in, they just didn't make any progress. And in fact, they almost certainly sent the team back a few years. And that's why I think this is a long-term project. They aren't where they were in 2007. And defensively, especially, that roster just needs to be completely overturned.
Yeah. So that's the offense or the off season. We're getting a little ahead of ourselves here. We do actually have 5 games left in this shit show of a season. So let's talk about the one we have in front of us, why we're talking to begin with. The game on Sunday. Daryl Bevel, he's your interim coach. Can we expect anything different from the team except from a guy that's not going to physically berate your players week in and week out before the game actually starts so they're not mentally beaten to death when they get to the game on Sunday? Or, you know, what else can we expect from Daryl Bevel?
Yeah, it's interesting. We've the media has kind of been poking and prying him and players to really get any sort of hint if that's going to happen, because I think a lot of people are kind of under the impression that Matt Patricia, you know, kind of tied his hands behind his back a little bit offensively. The Lions have always, under Patricia, kind of been this ball control offense where they're running the ball a lot. They're trying to bleed clock and control the tempo and really just kind of move slow and methodically down the field. Whereas last year we saw a flash of it, at least with Bevel, where it's like big play after big play after big play, like unleashing Stafford's arm downfield. And that's been reined in so much this year that everyone's just kind of wondering, well, now that Patricia's gone, maybe the shackles will be free and we'll get to see a more aggressive, more fun Daryl Bevel. And that's a word that he's used all week. It's like he wants to bring fun back to the team. And whether that means, you know, trick plays and throwing things downfield. And the Lions have done trick plays here and there, including a couple on Thanksgiving, actually. But I do get a sense that there is going to be something a little more, a little different this week. And he mentioned tempo a little bit. Or actually, it wasn't him that mentioned tempo. It was left tackle Taylor Decker, who mentioned today's practice was a little more up tempo, and they're using tempo to their advantage in practice, and maybe we'll see them go a little more no huddle or something like that. So I think there are going to be tweaks. I think getting DeAndre Swift back, which, you know, sounds like it's probably going to happen this week, will also be, you know, a huge thing. The Lions offense has been bad in the past couple weeks because he's been gone. They get shut out for the first time in over a decade, partially because he's gone. Also, Danny Amendola has been gone. Kenny Galladay has been gone. I think they get at least one of those two back, probably Amendola, unfortunately for Detroit. So offensively speaking, I think you could see that spark. Defensively speaking, no. No hope. They're only worse off in terms of the roster than where they have been all season, because Danny Shelton just went to injured reserve. So did Desmond Trufant. The Lions are just really hurting everywhere. I don't think Corey Unlin, the defensive coordinator, has anything up his sleeve. I don't think anything was being held back because him and Patricia have been friends for a long time. So I think defensively this team is still as screwed as it's ever been. Offensively, though, we could see a little bit of a spark.
Okay. Well, I mean, so I guess it sounds like we've got strength against strength and then weakness against weakness in our two matchups, and it's going to come down to which team can win those matchups. You know, can our defense slow your offense down, this new up-tempo, fun, exciting offense that you're crossing your fingers that you hope you see on Sunday? Or which one of these bottom of the rung units on our offense, your defense will be able to win the battle on Sunday to help their team win. Because the result week one, it's kind of a mixed bag when you go back to look at that, because that was the first ball football that any of those guys had played since at least January.
Yeah.
You know, for most of those guys. So we're talking 9 months of, you know, walkthroughs and Zoom meetings and barely practicing football to playing football. You and I talked about that before week one, about how many injuries and what we were expecting, because, you know, as I said over and over again, those guys having to go from 0 to 60 with no preseason, you know, the CBA has hamstrung the coaches in not letting their football players practice football in football practice, and wondering why their bodies are falling apart and why they can't handle this, that, or the other. When I had Emory Moorhead from the 85 Bears on my show, I asked him explicitly, asked him that question. It was like, I don't have the statistical data to back this up, but it feels like ever since they signed that CBA in 2011, where they basically eliminated contact in practice, that injuries have skyrocketed across the league. Not to mention, all of a sudden, these guys making millions upon millions of dollars, no one knows how to tackle anymore, you know, because they're not practicing. They're not doing contact, or, you know, no 2 days in training camp or like that anymore. And he's like, that's absolutely true. That is absolutely true. And he's one of those guys that's kind of wired in, you know, with retired players and stuff like that. He's got his finger on the pulse of all that stuff. And he told me, he's like, that's absolutely true. It absolutely is. These guys don't practice the way they used to. They're bigger, faster, stronger than we were in my day. And yet they're practicing the game not even a third of what we used to back then, and the result is showing up on the field, you know, and it's and then week one, it's just like all of that plus, you know, COVID hamstringing everybody for everything. So it's like no one really knew what to expect week one. So to see us come out and just be as bad as we possibly could be for the first three quarters of the game was frustrating, and yet not at all surprising, right, considering what we were going for. And then the fourth quarter happened, and they were like, okay, so that happened, and, you know, so is this like, okay, the Lions gonna lion kind of thing in the fourth quarter, or did we really do something here, or was this one of those week one fluke things, or whatever? It's like no one really knew how to feel, and the only conclusion really anyone could draw from that was two things. One, Patricia led Lions blow another late lead, and two, the Bears should have lost that game if not for DeAndre Swift. It's like outside of that, there was some people patting Mitch on the back for not completely blowing all four quarters and showing up at the end. But overall, it was, you know, Patricia and his, you know, whatever this guy's problem is with fourth quarters or hanging on to leads, and then, but they still should have won. That was like the prevailing factor from that game. But it's like everyone walked away from week one. It's just like, well, how should we feel about this game? Yeah. You know, it's like, how should we feel about it? Win or lose, Bears or Lions fans, you know, it was really confusing going into week two. You know, how do we feel about, how did you guys feel after week one? Was it frustration? What it was like, yeah, well, of course that happens. We're the Lions, for Christ's sake. Or was it, you know, you felt good of things, you know, if the rookie catches the ball, we're fine, you know, that kind of thing. What were you guys feeling after week one?
It was a little bit of both. It was a little bit of, well, you know, it sucks to let a division game slip away like that, but, yeah, you know, if Swift catches that ball, we're good. We're in a good spot. But I think the prevailing theory more was like, that team blew a 21-point lead to Mitchell Trubisky.
Yeah.
Who cares about what the rookie did? That's unacceptable. Right. And that's something we've seen time and time again with this coaching staff, is they can't hold on to leads. They can't play with the lead. They don't know what to do. Defensively, they're just bad. And so, I mean, the way I remember that game is that it didn't even feel like they were doing that good of a job stopping Chicago in the first half. Chicago was kind of shooting themselves in the foot.
Oh, for sure. You know,
they had plenty of plays inside of Lions territory in that first half, and they only walked away with 6 points. So it kind of felt like it was only a matter of time before, you know, that dam was going to burst. And then it certainly did in that fourth quarter. So I think most people realize like things are not okay. Not a lot of people in Detroit respected that Chicago team, even though they were coming off a, you know, an okay season last year. I think a lot of people thought, you know, that they didn't do anything to fix the offense.
Nope.
The defense is going to be who they are.
Yep.
And so our offense was expecting to be really good. There was very high expectations for that Detroit offense going into the season. Yep. Granted that you had a healthy Matthew Stafford, granted that you got a brand new running back and you overhauled the offensive line with a lot of new
and
good pieces.
And no Galladay or Galladay in that game, right?
I believe that's true.
Didn't he miss
about
the first three or four games or something like that?
Yeah, he had a hamstring. So you're right. So that's a big blow to the offense. And I don't know. I think overall people mostly came out of that game going, you know what? This is more the same with Patricia. They better turn this around quickly because they got – you know, a couple more division games coming off right off the bat. And so if we're even to see a little bit of this going forward and they don't learn from the same mistakes of going into a shell with a lead and not, you know, being aggressive on either side of the ball with a lead, then we're going to see more of this. And lo and behold, the following week they get up to like a 10-0 lead against the Packers in the first quarter, a 14-3 lead against the Packers in the first quarter. They end up losing that game by 3 touchdowns. That's it. Like that's.
Yeah,
I think 42
to 21.
That was,
yeah,
it wasn't necessarily the breaking point for everybody, but I think at that point, I would say maybe even half the fan base was already at the point of no return with Matt Patricia.
Yeah. The Bears Talk Underground is brought to you by our friends at BetOnline. BetOnline knows you might not be able to get out to a game this year, but you can still get in on the action at BetOnline. BetOnline is going the extra mile to make sure you can get in on everything imaginable this season. From game spreads and totals to team player and coaching props, BetOnline gives you more options to wager than any place online. Head on over to BetOnline today and use promo code ARMCHAIR to take advantage of all the great sign-up bonuses. BetOnline, your online sportsbook experts. Support for the Bears Talk Underground also comes from Manscaped, who is the best in men's below-the-belt grooming. Manscaped offers precision engineered tools for your family jewels. Jingle balls to the walls, fellas. Listen up. Untrimmed pubes are a thing of the past. It's time to gear up and get yourself the gift of shaving this holiday season. And I'm talking, of course, about the Manscaped Perfect Package 3.0. Manscaped has redesigned the electric trimmer. Their Lawnmower 3.0 has proprietary advanced skin-safe technology, so this trimmer cuts on your nuts. It's also waterproof, so you can use it in the shower. The Lawnmower 3.0 comes inside their brand-new Perfect Package 3.0, which makes for the perfect gift this holiday season. It's literally everything you need to keep trimmed, cut-free, and smelling nice down there. And don't use the same trimmer on your face as using on your balls. That's just nasty. The Manscaped Perfect Package 3.0 also includes the Crop Preserver, an anti-chafing ball deodorant and moisturizer. You already put this deodorant on your armpits, so why aren't you putting it on the smelliest part of your body? And yes, your balls do stink. Speaking of sweaty, stinky balls, I am thankful for their Crop Reviver. This product, along with the Crop Preserver, keep your balls from sweating, smelling, and sticking. And boy, they really paint a really great picture of what's going on down there, don't they? And these products smell good. Their manly scent is attractive and will help set the mood, if you know what I mean. The Perfect Package will also come with a pair of Manscaped boxers that'll keep your junk feeling fresh all day long. It's time to upgrade those overused pair of boxers in Manscaped high-performance anti-chafing boxers. Tis the season to Manscaped to get yourself, your dad, your brother, your friends, the best gift of all, the Manscaped Perfect Package 3.0. Get 20% off and free shipping with the code ARMCHAIR at manscaped.com. Once again, get 20% off and free shipping with the code ARMCHAIR at manscaped.com. Clean up your nuts and make Santa proud this year. Your balls will thank you. And with that, let's get back to the show. Yeah, I mean, and that's very much like when I mentioned before, watching that game in a sports bar, and at halftime, I'm like, that's it. Pull the plug. I don't care. Get him out of there. He's doing everything that he did in 2019, and I suffered through that. I swallowed it. I dealt with it. I stomached it all, okay? and I didn't puke my goddamn guts out after every single game, which I was fully within my rights to do. But here it is. It's 2020. I don't care about COVID or anything like that. They say he won the quarterback competition. He beat out a guy that we all know is better than him, and yet, or has at least played better than he has, and yet he's showing every reason why we didn't want him there in the first place. Sit him down. He's done. You know, and then the funny thing was he pulled Mitch when I don't think anybody was expecting him to.
Right, right.
You know, it's like, granted, the moment made sense as far as like him nearly throwing a pick six and everything, which ironically, that tackle saved the game, because if they score, mm-hmm. we're tying the game instead of taking the lead on that right. last touchdown that we scored, but which I thought was kind of hilarious. But it's his last respite as quarterback of the team is to save a victory for us, which was funny to me. But, you know, it's like I just remember, you know, how frustrating it was to sit there. I mean, it was maddening to watch in the first quarters. Like, this is what we've been waiting for. You know, seeing this improved Mitchell Trubisky, all that Nagy could do was talk about how his accuracy is better, his footwork is better, and then none of it was better. He was just his old self. Like, there was one play, and I talked about it on last week's show, actually, where Trubisky makes this amazing throw to Allen Robinson, who has to make this unbelievable, you know, hands catch in triple coverage when he had Jimmy Graham running. Like, he was so wide open, Jeremy, that he probably would have scored if Mitchell throws him the ball. Okay, like, there are three guys. He throws it into a three-man pocket in the secondary, where if he throws a five-yard dump off to Jimmy Graham, he is so wide open. It's at least 25, 30 yards before anybody even touches him. That's how wide open he was. But he's got to go to his guy, Allen Robinson, instead of making the easy five-yard catch. And he did the exact same thing on Sunday night against the Packers, which means he learned nothing in his break, in his time, his time watching the game instead of playing it. He threw it to a guy that three defensive backs were converging on before he even throws the ball. Three guys are converging on Darnell Mooney when he's got Allen Robinson one-on-one wide open across the middle for a first down. But he takes the shot downfield instead. You know, and that's why Mitch is not going to be a Bear in 2021. And he'd be lucky to be with anybody, quite frankly, with the way that he's played the last several years. Because he's proven week in and week out that he can play, but he just can't play well. Like, he looks the part. He does. You know, he looks the part. He's a good-looking kid. He's the athletic. You know, like I was talking about, the effortlessness and the way he plays the game versus how clunky and stiff Nick Foles can look sometimes. But he makes all the wrong reads. He makes all the wrong mistakes. He does very little things correctly. You know, he can do them well, but he doesn't do them right. You know, yeah. That's the thing. So it's just, you know, week one was so frustrating, and, you know, can come away feeling lucky because a rookie made a rookie mistake. That's why we won the game. And then when I was going back and looking at things, I forget exactly what the statistic was, but it was like, this was Matt Patricia's 33rd game as head coach of the Lions, and he's lost X amount of percent of those games. He's given up leads in yeah. the, because I think they said it was like the 11th or 12th. So 33% of the games
yeah, something like
that he's been the head coach for, he's had a lead going into the fourth quarter and he lost. It was like, that'd be enough for me to put a bullet in my head.
Yep. And that's, I mean, that's how it felt. It really felt like, I mean, everything in the offseason was just like, maybe this has finally turned a corner. He finally has his guys. He finally has a locker room that believes in his vision. You know, he's had 2 years to learn on the job. The offense is coming back healthy and explosive and all that sort of stuff. And for the first game, the very first game of the season, to be the exact same storyline we saw for 2 years, it was just like, you gotta be kidding me, man.
And that's
we
what
spent
it was
all
like for us,
offseason
man.
Hyping you up, and yeah. this is what you're gonna give us.
Yeah, and that's what it felt like. I just got
yeah.
done
yeah.
with my little diatribe there. That's what we thought.
Yep.
That, you know, all the things that we were hurting, we thought we improved on them. We went out and signed, you know, granted he's probably past his prime, but we signed an all-pro tight end. We drafted the future of our tight end position right behind him. We got this young, exciting rookie corner, you know, all that kind of stuff. And then we go out there and it's like, and we're down 27-6 right now, or 24, whatever the hell the score was. It's like, Jesus Christ, this is happening again. You know, this is what we're going to do against the Lions. No disrespect, but come on. You know, it's like, I know that we don't, we lose more than we win in Detroit, but come on. You know, it's one thing for us to lose the game. It's another for us to get laughed out of an empty stadium the way that we were for the first three quarters of that game. And, you know, then the fourth quarter happens. You still don't walk away feeling very good about it, you know?
Yeah. And it turns out we were both right.
Yeah. Oh, man. So, you know, and then this game comes along, and you guys have lost, what, 4 out of 5, 5 out of 6, whatever it is? 4 out of 5.
Yeah.
We've lost all 5 of those games, mm-hmm. If not for a crazy finish with the football team from Washington. You're also on a 5-game losing streak right along with us and everything. So it's just like something's got to give in this game. And at this point, I don't know what it's going to be, because I don't know if Akeem Hicks is coming back, if he's going to be healthy enough to play this week. It was obvious we missed him against Green Bay. But you know, it just seems like the defense did not show up for that Green Bay game at all. Pagano seemed out of sorts and getting outsmarted by LaFleur at every turn in that game. And, you know, not that Daryl Bevel is the chess player that LaFleur appeared to be on Sunday, but, you know, it just seemed like Pagano didn't really do anything to fix what wasn't working against Green Bay. He stuck with the 3-man rush and dropping 8 and watched Aaron Rodgers sit back there, take 7 seconds to find a receiver and pick us apart, and still kept sending 3 guys and dropping 8 regardless of it. So he didn't learn his lesson in that one. And the defense really wasn't giving any kind of effort in the third quarter. That's where the game really got away from us and everything. And then with Mitch and the offense, is like, what kind of progress are we going to get before Mitch does something Mitch-like and gives the ball away or makes a mistake that costs us or ends the drive and throws it to this guy when that one was open and things like, I mean, the cynicism and all that kind of stuff. And it just, it's at an all-time high right now, to the point where the people that are asking for us to tank so we'd have better positions are kind of winning the day right now. And you know how I feel about that stuff. Yep. And it just, it makes me nuts to hear people talk that way. But those people are the ones that everyone's kind of bandwagoning on to improve what could be in 2021.
Well, yeah. And I would say I feel like Lions fans are maybe 80% in that boat right now, where it's all about draft position. And I understand it. Like I sympathize with both sides. I'm the kind of person that always roots for their team on Sunday, just because why would I be following this team if I wasn't watching them to win? But obviously, I mean, the Lions are in a spot where their schedule is god awful going forward. They're probably going to win at most one game, maybe two. Mm-hmm. And it probably comes either this week or week 17 against the Vikings, because the other games are the Packers, Titans, and Buccaneers.
Right.
And if they lose all 5 of these games, they're probably picking in the top 5. And to pick in the top 5 in back-to-back seasons, I get it. That's tempting. That's how you restart a franchise. And with a new GM, what better way to draw someone in than with a top 5 pick? I get all of that. But at the same time, I'm sick of losing to the damn Bears. I'm sorry. This team hasn't won a divisional game since 2018.
Wow. Is that right?
Yeah. They went 0-6 last year, and they're 0-3 to start this year. Matt Patricia never beat the Chicago Bears. He never beat the Minnesota Vikings. So if Daryl Bevel can come in and beat the Bears in his first career game, I'm all for it. I'm sorry.
Sure.
Like, I don't care. I need to feel that again. And I know I probably drove you and your listeners crazy with the "we own the Bears" stuff from 3 years ago. But like, I'd love to throw that hashtag out. Just
who wouldn't,
time.
Man? You know, who wouldn't? Well, I, you know, what I always thought was that you would engage with them, you know, because so everybody's so cool on Twitter. You know, everybody's so measured with their thoughts and all that kind of stuff. It's like, why would you do that? It's like, well, actually, it was, wasn't so much why would you do that? It's like, I'm talking to Bear fans. Why are you doing that? You know why he's doing it. Why are you letting him? You idiots. Just don't do it. I know it's irritating to hear a Lions fan talking shit like that, but don't take the bait.
Right.
Don't take the bait.
Believe me, I know that the Lions went 0-16 in 2008. You can't pull that card on me like I didn't know it happened.
Right. So that to me was more frustrating than you needling the Bear fans. It was them actually responding. It's like, God, you're such an idiot. What, you see what he's doing and you're letting him do it anyway. You deserve what happens here. So that was the thing that always kind of frustrated me and made me laugh hilariously at this. It's like you deserve whatever you get here. You deserve, it's like, Jeremy's a clever guy. I'm pretty sure he's going to find a way to make you look even more stupid than you are for responding in the first place. But you deserve whatever you get, whatever you get. So, you know, that's what I would sit back and I would watch those interactions like, oh, boy, here we go. So, but, you know, it's just, and I totally get it. I absolutely get it. We're in that same boat with the Packers. That's the one team that we can't get past. You know, we can split a series with the Vikings. We can sweep a series or split a series with the Lions year in and year out. But one win in, you know, or, you know, one win for each Tressman, Fox, and Nagy in each of their tenures up to this point. One win apiece against Green Bay.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, just – that's so three out of what, 12, 14 games, whatever it was. I mean, that's pathetic. Yep. And what's even more frustrating is it doesn't matter what kind of team the Bears have. Green Bay makes it look easy no matter what. And they're the ones that can always kind of figure out, even if they're super gluing a team together to come in and win a football game against the Bears. And it's just over and over. They're superior to us in some kind of way that always costs us the game, or, you know, or it's a mental thing. Like, we can't get out of our own way and stop making mistakes that cost us big against a Green Bay. And that's the same thing. I see that happening a lot in the Bears Lions games, that, you know, one step forward, two steps back, because that 20 yard play is coming back because your guard held on that play. He couldn't let Akeem Hicks get past him, so he held and he got caught, you know, and things like that. The Bears do that all the time. We had a huge play on third down against Green Bay. Charles Leno held on that play. So we went from getting first down on like third and seven to now it's like third and 20 something. And, you know, we're giving the ball back on the next play. And it's just, those are the kind of things that keep happening in those games, and that's why we can never get again over the hump against them. And then for the last few years, at least, that's been the tail of the tape for the Bears, or for the Lions trying to get past the Bears.
Yep. And everyone else.
Right. But especially that.
Yeah.
You know, especially that one. I mean, because there's always that one team that always kind of seems, because you've had an easier time beating Green Bay over the last few years than we have.
It's true. Yeah.
You know, and frankly, we've had better teams over the last few years than you've had. But you figure out a way to beat Green Bay and handily. In 20, didn't you sweep them in Patricia's first year as coach?
They might have. I know the second one was kind of fool's gold because the Packers and Lions weren't playing for anything in week 17.
Yeah,
but I can't remember the first one of that season.
I think they did beat them.
They may have beat them, and I mean, last year they came really close to beating them in that Monday Night Football game in
Green Bay.
Oh,
dude, don't get me started. That game made me insane.
You made you insane.
I mean, you know, I'm just saying, it's like, it's that's how bad it was. Even it made me crazy, you know, to watch Green Bay keep getting those stupid, what was it, like the roughing the passer or illegal
hands
to the face?
To the face.
Yeah, come on.
Yeah. And you're right. They did sweep him in 2008 or 2018. Mason Crosby, that was the Mason Crosby game where I think he missed four field goals in that game.
Ah, okay. Yeah. Yeah, yeah. So, but it's just, you know, that is what it is. And it's just like, I get the sentiment, you know, and it's like, I'm tired of losing to this team. I'm tired of losing to them, because that's where you're, you know, you kind of go back on that. Like, you know, like I always like to say the yeah, but thing. And it's like, yeah, we went 9-7, but we got swept by the Bears this year. So,
yep.
You know, we should have had those wins, or, you know, look at the record we could have had if we had won those games and things like that. And no matter how well we play, we can't seem to get past Chicago and, you know, things like that. That's us every year with Green Bay. Yep. It's like, yeah, we went 12-4, but we lost that week one game against, we should have won that game against Green Bay to start off the year. Imagine what we would have been, blah, blah, blah. It's tough, man. And, you know, we both got an interesting offseason coming up despite how these last five games go. And, you know, I'm interested to see how it's going to turn out. I'm interested to see how Detroit's going to respond to the new coach. And, you know, maybe this could be addition by subtraction, getting Patricia out of there with this little chunk of time left. And, you know, we'll see what the Bears can do now that our coach is publicly calling them out. You know, like I said, I think it's too little too late as far as him, you know, showing some kind of outrage over the way we've been playing the last month and change. We went 0 for November.
That's, yeah. Never good.
No, not at all. The meat of the schedule right there in the middle, you didn't win a single thing. Yeah, that's not good at all. You know, we got five games left. And, you know, I think what really bothers me is that, you know, Bear fans are in kind of tank mode so that we can draft a quarterback. And honestly, Jeremy, with all the problems that we've had at the position, it's actually the last one I want to draft at this point. I don't want the Bears to draft another quarterback. Not yet. Not yet. You know, I didn't want us to draft Trubisky. I didn't want Trubisky. I didn't want Watson, and I didn't know enough about Mahomes. So it's like I didn't want the Bears to draft a quarterback because we had one of the worst offensive off seasons forever. Because, you know, Pace treated Fox like a lame duck coach going into that one. He got him absolutely no help on offense. We got rid of Jay Cutler simply because the fan base just didn't want him around anymore. I think he made that move to appease the fans more than anything else because he paid Mike Glennon just the same money that we were going to pay Jay Cutler in the first place. And, you know, we got no help on the offensive side, and then we draft the quarterback, not to mention giving up like four picks to move up one spot in order to do it. And I was like, and I said it, I was doing knee-jerk reactions from the draft, and I was like, we don't have a football team around him right now. Yeah. Like, we literally have no one. I mean, we barely have guys that can block for him. We certainly don't have anyone for him to throw to. This is the worst idea. The worst idea. You know, regardless of whether it was Watson or Mahomes or, you know, it was like just drafting a quarterback, period. I was vehemently against it. Vehemently against it. This is not the right move. That's the last thing that I want. Anyone who thinks the Bears should draft a quarterback is delusional. I thought it was the last thing in the world that we should have been doing. And we went ahead and did it. And I'm back on that train again. You know, we don't have an offensive line that we can trust. We're probably going to lose Allen Robinson in the offseason, which leaves us with not much in the wide receiving core after that. It's like we need to add a few more pieces and then add the quarterback to that. Let him be the cherry on top as opposed to trying to build around him, because we've proven in our history we can't do it. We can't get the quarterback and then build around him because we end up destroying the poor bastard because we don't have a roster that can help the kid succeed while we try to build around him. So we got to put the team together first and then go get our quarterback. And I fear that if we keep losing and that if we're in a position to even get close to somebody we want, they're going to pull the trigger on, especially if we get a new GM and a new coach in here together. They're going to want to go out there and get their guy, and I'm totally against it.
That's fair. I mean, it makes a lot of sense, and Lions are probably going to be facing a similar conundrum, albeit kind of different with Matthew Stafford, but
sure.
A lot of people are talking right now, you know, what is the future at quarterback in Detroit, and it's no longer a clear answer, which is sad to say because I do like Matthew Stafford a lot. I think he's easily the best quarterback this franchise has ever seen. He's also a stand-up guy and a good locker room leader, and I'd hate to see him go somewhere else and succeed, but at the same time, I understand from a franchise standpoint, we're getting towards the point in his career and the point in his contract where you got to start having those tough conversations. And
can you afford to let him go? I mean, salary cap wise, I mean, are you going to take a huge cap hit? Because I know you just gave him an extension like a year or two ago. It's like, can you afford to let him go? Or are you basically just going to take all your hits at once? New coach, new GM, you know, $20 million cap hit to let Stafford move on. And then we go on, you know, looking forward to 2022 and where we can really make some moves. And we've got some good cap space and stuff like that.
It's a trade-off, right? It's about, like you said, a $20 million dead cap hit if they move on from him, which is very significant. But he's a 35 cap hit guy if they keep him. And so the trade-off there is, do you just kind of like make the move this year and get what you can for him now? Because you wait another year, his value probably goes down.
Sure.
I don't know if it's significant or not. It depends on how he plays. You know, he's been dealing with a lot of injuries the past few years. So if he can't get through, let's say, the rest of this season healthy, or if you decide to keep him next year and he suffers another injury, well, then maybe people are looking at a 33, 34-year-old Matthew Stafford and be like, I'm not trading a first-rounder for that. But could you get one this year going into 2021? Maybe. And so you have to factor – you kind of have to factor all that in, and you probably have to put him at – you probably have to put out a few calls and see – what teams are willing to give in, and then the new GM has to decide, do I cut bait now? Just, you know, maybe I can mess with the contract a little bit and make it spread out, the cap it spread over the next 2 years, so we're not taking a big hit in this COVID affected camp. Or you say, you know what, let's draft a guy, or let's wait a year to draft a guy, have him sit behind Stafford for a year or two, then we move on. And it's not really a black and white choice. It's tough, and that's why it's a real tough conversation to have right now, especially with people who have supported Stafford for a long time. A lot of people that haven't supported Stafford for a long time because he hasn't been winning, and so a lot of people are ready to move on from him too. And I don't even know where I stand at on this point. It's tough to see a great player like him go, but it's totally understandable that now might be the time to move on.
Yeah, never a fun discussion to have, especially for someone who's been around. And despite what's been around him, he has been good, even if the teams haven't been good.
Yep.
You know, and then in those playoff years, 2011, 2014, he was out of this world.
Yep.
You know, with the touchdowns and racking up the yards and him and Megatron doing their thing and all that kind of stuff, you know. The discussion about whether or not he's a Hall of Famer is like, well, his stats would say one thing, but his win-loss record would say something completely different.
Right.
You know, that's not necessarily his fault.
Right.
You know, not his fault that he played for the Lions his entire career and he was able to, you know, do some really impressive things and some noteworthy things on offense when he had one crap defense after another. You know, because that was the thing, you know, and you and I have talked about that before, was that in 2011, 2014, he literally had to outscore the opponents because his defense was going to do nothing to stop the opponent. Like, you were averaging 38 points a game because you needed to.
Right.
Not because you were good enough to score 38 points, but you had to score 38 points a game to win because your defense was going to give at least 31 up to the other team. And those games that you lost were when you – ran into a defense that was good enough to slow you down, or, you know, you ran into an offense that really racked it up against your defense in those games. And it's just like, that's not on Matt Stafford that he was, you know, party to a defense that gave up 40 points in a playoff game where he scored 35, that kind of thing. Because there's always, you know, that cliche, if you score 35 points, you should never lose a game.
Correct.
And, you know, how many games did Matt Stafford lose when his offense scored 31, but his defense gave up 32, you know, and things like that. So it's a tough situation to be in because, you know, it's not his fault that he's in the spot that he's in for the most part. And, you know, he's getting older, which is a race that everybody loses. And, you know, the older you get, the less value that you have or the easier you are to move on from. And things like that. So it sucks that it's coming to this, but it's like that discussion kind of began last year with the Tua thing. You guys drafting third overall. Stafford missed most of last year with that back injury and things like that. Is, you know, is now the time? Do we bring Tua in, let him study behind Stafford, or do we trade Stafford now and let Tua take over, or whatever? If you guys are back in top five territory, then you're in Justin Fields' territory, you're in Trey Lance' territory, Zach Wilson. You know, sure. There's a lot of intriguing guys that are going to be in that spot with a new GM and a new head coach. Are they going to want to make their mark with this new guy and move on from Stafford, or bring in, you know, the Jordan Love, if you will, of the draft to be behind that guy and use your first round pick on the quarterback of the future and let Stafford do what he can and, you know, let him play out to a point where you can feasibly let him go as opposed to $20 million cap hits and things like that? Or, you know, do you just cut bait altogether and let the rookie go from here?
Yeah, and I think draft status might have a lot to do with what they end up deciding to do, because there are a lot of people that are of the belief that if you're in that top five, top three range, then you almost no matter what your situation is, you need to be considering quarterback just in terms of value of that pick.
Or at least, I'm sorry for interrupting, you have to be open to the idea of a king's ransom to move out of that spot.
Right.
You know, instead of taking like the best player available to, you know, in the top five, or say if you're, you know, like your top 10 right now, or it's, you know, seven or eight, whatever it is, maybe I want to trade my pick to so-and-so and move back into the late teens or the 20s and rack up some picks instead of taking that offensive tackle or that wide receiver or that running back or whatever that's going to help my team right now. Maybe I want to back up and load up one and get some more guys. In that you have to at least be open to that if you're not willing to pull the trigger on the quarterback.
Yeah, and I think that's what Lions fans are really hoping in this past draft. People were okay with drafting Jeff Okuda, but a lot of people would have preferred to draft Jeff Okuda at five instead of three and pick up an extra first.
Sure.
And yeah, I think that's also going to be very much an idea in the general manager's mind, whoever he or she may be, because the Lions only have five draft picks next year. I mean, and granted, the ones that they're missing are, I think, a sixth and a seventh, so, or maybe a fifth and a seventh or something like that. But not a ton of draft capital for the new GM, which I think might be a reason why it's not as appealing as a job as maybe someone like Houston or whoever else has GM openings going into the year, maybe the Bears even. But yeah, I think you have to have all those sort of options open, and drafting a quarterback is certainly one. Trading back is certainly one. You have to have a GM with an open mind who's just going to not focus necessarily on getting the team better for 2021, but the long term.
Yeah. All right. Well, I think just real quick to, you know, the game on Sunday. You know, what are you thinking for Sunday? What do you I know you're hoping for a victory, but what are you ultimately hoping to see from the team?
I mean, I'd love to see just, you know, a different kind of offense out there, one that's a little more aggressive, one that uses their talented guys. And again, it probably looks like Kenny Galladay's not going to be a go, but the Lions have a lot of talent on that offensive side of the ball. Yeah, he didn't practice on Wednesday, so
wow.
It seems like maybe, you know, I don't know if they eventually shut him down for good or what exactly is happening there, but they still have DeAndre Swift. They still have TJ Hockenson, who I think was second amongst all tight ends in receiving yards in November. They need to focus more on those guys. Those guys should be centerpieces to their offense. And DeAndre Swift got his first start of the season when he last played and put up 150 all-purpose yards. So I'd like to see that again. I'd like to see more aggressive play calling, maybe on defense too, sending some blitzes a little more often, getting Trubisky a little rattled. Make it so he doesn't throw three touchdowns against only the Lions every single week. I don't know if I'm expecting any of that. If I'm being completely honest, I mean, both teams have this is a potential for a big rebound game, whether people respond to Matt Nagy and his whole rant earlier in this week, whether the Lions respond to a firing and a new different kind of leadership, whichever team, I guess, you know, kind of rebounds better off that big change or that big, you know, moment in the franchise's career probably wins on Sunday.
How are you guys against the run this year?
They were horrible in the first 4 weeks. They came out a lot better out of the bye week with their only real slip up against the Vikings and Dalvin Cook, who ran all over him. But Dalvin Cook, you know, sure. You can give him an exception. But otherwise, they've actually been very good. The one thing I would say, though, is they just lost Danny Shelton for the year, their big nose tackle. So might not be as good this week.
Okay. Well, it's just that you know, this past weekend against the Packers was the first time that we've looked competent in the running game in a really long time. And I was wondering if we might be able to build on that this week against the Lions, because the Lions in the beginning, like you were saying, you guys were terrible against the run in the first 4 weeks of the season. We were actually pretty good running the football at the beginning of the season, the first three games, because we ran into the Colts. That stopped almost immediately. The Colts and the Buccaneers are two of the best run defenses in the league. We did nothing on the run against those teams. But against Detroit, the Giants, and the Falcons in the first 3 weeks, we averaged like 130 yards a game in those first three games and have been bottom of the league ever since then. And this past week, we got more. Honestly, as sad as it's been, we basically got more in one run out of David Montgomery than we'd been averaging, you know, like in the 5 weeks prior to that. That 57-yarder he broke off was close to like the 60-yard average we've had over the last, you know, or in this entire losing streak. We've been absolutely incompetent in running game because our offensive line has been so bad. And it seemed like we had a decent combination, you know, or one that worked on Sunday against the Packers, because Montgomery, not only did he have that big 57-yarder, he broke 100 yards for the first time this year against Green Bay on Sunday when he only ran the ball 11 times, which is the other thing that makes Bear fans want to slam their head into a goddamn wall, is that, you know, we finally figured out how to run the football. Like, put the big run aside. Then you've got 10 carries for like 47 yards. That's an average I can work with, man. Right. Give that guy the ball. Let him run 25 times a game at 4 yards a carry. Let's do that, you know, and see if he can break one for 12, 15 yards and stuff like that. But instead, it's like, no, you know, we're going to go ahead and throw the ball 58 times. And, you know, even though our running back is running the ball well, it doesn't really matter. We've got an offense to run here. So, you know, just wondering if you guys are struggling against the run, maybe we can, you know, use that and let Montgomery build on the game that he had against Green Bay, because leaving the game in Mitch's hands is a recipe for disaster, even in the fourth quarter. So, you know, I just was hoping that would be something we could take care of this week and see if they can build on our first decent performance in the offensive line in 8 weeks. So, but we'll see. We'll see. Like, I'm intrigued to see the game. You know, as a football fan, I look forward to the day that the Lions start playing well. Because actually, one of my favorite times in football was in the early 90s when the Bears and Lions were duking it out for the NFC Central championship. You know, when it was Barry Sanders and, you know, those days, and Rodney Peete and Herman Moore and all those guys. That was fun football. Back then, back when the NFC Central sent four teams a year to the playoffs. You know, the only team that didn't make the playoffs was the Buccaneers, and they were the last place team. But the Packers, the Bears, the Lions, the Vikings, all of them made the playoffs. And now that we have seven playoff teams, that's something we can do again. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. So let's see if we can't get this division headed in the right direction. Let's be the NFC West next year, where it's a matter of, you know, who's going to be the odd man out that doesn't make the playoffs, as opposed to, you know, the division winner winning like the NFC East. The division winner has to make the playoffs, unfortunately.
Right.
And, you know, speaking of which, real quick, just a funny note. Have you seen what the draft order looks like for the NFC East right now?
Yeah, technically all four of them would probably be above the Lions in terms of draft order, but three of them currently are. And then obviously who's leading it now? Is it
the Giants?
The Giants.
It goes, it's like 3, 3, 6, 8, 19, you know, even though both the Eagles and the Giants are, you know, whatever, like the Eagles are like 4-8 or whatever, but you know, it's because the Giants are technically in the playoffs right now and leading the division, despite being 4-7. They're drafting 19th right now as the you know, it's just like, that's hilarious, man. That is so funny. The Cowboys are first, drafting in the, you know, 3. I think the Eagles are 6, and the Skins are the ones that are tied with the Giants. But the Giants have swept the Skins, the football team. And, you know, but it's like, 3, 6, 8, 19. Hilarious. Hilarious.
Great.
So, Anyway, Jeremy, as fun as always to talk to you, man. And even though we didn't talk about the game much, and more so the sad state of our franchises and you know, what we hope to see and things like that, still always fun having you on the show. We look forward to having you back again real soon.
Yeah, of course. And we already, you know, completely scrapped our preview podcast. We're just talking about coaches now. So good on you for sticking with it.
Well, I mean, what else is there right now? You know, it's like we either know exactly what to expect, which won't be good, or if it comes out and it's great, be like, wouldn't that be a great surprise?
Right.
You know, kind of thing. So why sit here and talk about, you know, either sit here and depress ourselves right into, you know, drinking by talking about what we've seen on the field for the last 11 weeks. Why not talk about the future and the possibility of brightness and happiness and success as opposed to, you know, playing out the string, which is really what both of our teams are doing right now.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
So where can we hear that show talking about the future of the Detroit Lions?
Well, I literally just had Matt Maiocco from NBC Sports Bay Area on our podcast about a couple hours ago is when we recorded. We talked all about Robert Saleh, 100% Robert Saleh, the 49ers defensive coordinator.
Yeah, it's going to be a big name in the offseason.
Yep, and, you know, he's a Dearborn native, which is about 2 miles outside of the Lions training facility. So there's a lot of hope that he's their guy. He's my number one favorite guy at this point. But we're far off from that. I mean, the Lions have to find a GM too, and they might decide to do that first. So we'll see.
Right. All right.
It's by the way, Pride of Detroit. So just search Pride of Detroit on any of your podcast platforms. If
the
you're
POD cast.
Yes. The POD cast. Just search Pride of Detroit, because I think if you search POD cast, you're going to find a whole bunch of other stuff.
Yeah. You're going to find it. You're just needle in a haystack. You type in POD cast. So, all right, Jeremy, always a great time having you on, man. We'll talk to you again soon.
Sounds good, Larry.
As always, want to thank Jeremy for being on the show and continuing to be one of my favorite guests to have on the show. The game on Sunday is going to be interesting, and I'll get more into depth on that with the deep dive preview tomorrow, as I try to, you know, maybe break down a little bit and put together somewhat of a game plan for our beloved to see what can we do against this Lions team, even not knowing what to expect from them on offense. That seemed to be the one thing that Jeremy was kind of optimistic about going into this game, is that, you know, the Lions have felt kind of, or at least Daryl Bevel, the offensive coordinator and now the interim head coach, felt kind of reined in, kind of handcuffed by Patricia and what he wanted to do, or what he wanted from his offense. And with him gone, therefore go the restrictions. Maybe they open things up a bit, maybe not so much with trick plays, but definitely, you know, opening up the offense to kind of attack the Bears, as opposed to just trying to run the football and you know, lull us into a play action game and things like that. So that was the one thing that Jeremy was excited about. And fortunately for us, that's the one unit on the field that's good, which is our defense. And, you know, like I said in the conversation, it's going to come down to the strength against strength, which team can win that one. And then more importantly, the weakness against weakness in our offense versus their defense, which one of those units can prevail on Sunday, because that's pretty much where you're going to come away with your victor. If Mitch can have another Mitch performance against the Lions, and I mean that actually in a good way, because Mitch seems to play well against the Lions, or at least he knows how to finish against Detroit. You know, we'll see how it all turns out. I mean, the team as a whole has a lot to answer for after their performance on Sunday, because maybe everyone's accusing of the defense of quitting, but the offense had 2 weeks to put a cohesive game plan together against Green Bay, and it was the Mitch Trubisky from 2019 show all over again. Said he wasn't going to try to play hero ball, but he throws it to a receiver that's got three DBs converging on him rather than throwing it to the all-pro candidate who's running wide open across the middle of the field for a first down. You know, it's like, you know, those three guys that are converging on your deep route right now them running away from you means that they're opening up running room for Allen Robinson in front of him. Maybe read that instead of trying to hit a big play down the field and things like that. So, you know, and then, you know, like we talked about right there towards the end of the discussion, was hopefully that with the performance that we had, the decent performance, the passable performance from the offensive line that we had, maybe that's something we can build on. And Montgomery with his 100 and something yards on 11 carries, maybe that's something we come out heavy with David Montgomery in the beginning, especially if we have some success, because we need that. And I'll talk more, like I said, I'll talk more about that tomorrow on the preview as far as, you know, the running game and everything. But this is a winnable game for us. We should come to this game as fans and such expecting to win, because we can, as opposed to kind of hoping we win, even though we don't have a prayer against the four out of the last five teams that we've played. You know, if we win, we'll be a 500 football team again. We'll still be in the hunt for that seventh playoff spot with three other winnable games in front of us. I mean, as messed up as this season has been up to this point, as much as everybody is calling for us to tank so we can be in a position to get the best draft pick possible, which honestly I feel is more important in the second round and below than it is in the first round. I got to be honest with you guys, because you guys know how I feel about us possibly drafting a quarterback in 2021. I don't want it right here, right now. I don't. Maybe my opinion on that will change after I see some of the off-season moves that we've made. Maybe we'll do something with the receivers. We'll bolster the offensive line. Maybe I'll have a different opinion of it as we get closer to the draft. But right here, right now, with the offensive line that we have in-house and the talent that we'll have, especially if we lose Allen Robinson at the wide receiver spot, Tariq Cohen coming off an ACL, you know, I don't know. The last thing I want to do is throw a rookie to the wolves with that offense. So I'm against it 100% right here, right now. And in me saying that maybe I'll change my mind is me kind of softening on the idea. But like I said, I got to see some moves that will make me not worry about the quarterback heading into the draft, you know? And so I just don't see the Bears as a team that can build around a quarterback. We got to build the team and then go get the quarterback, kind of like we did when we made the move for Jay Cutler. You know, at least that's what Jerry Angelo's thought process was, is that we had a team that could help the quarterback, even though we didn't as far as offensive weapons was concerned. But with our defense, we had a good offensive line at the time. We had Matt Forte. So go ahead and get the quarterback and see if he's the final missing piece. That, I think, was the best example of the Bears doing that. Other than that, it's been go get the quarterback and then try to build around him, and that has not worked for us at all. So we'll see. But, you know, I'm anxious to see what's going to happen on Sunday. How does this team respond to being called out publicly by Matt Nagy for the first time? And, you know, even though he was kind of talking about the defense, how does the whole team respond to this? You know, will the offense bounce back? Will they clean up the mistakes they had against Green Bay? Will Mitch watch the film and learn from his mistakes? Or will he just continue to be Mitch and do Mitch things that will make us all crazy? So, I don't know. We'll talk a bit more about it on the Deep Dive preview tomorrow. So, until then, my name is Larry D, and this has been the Bears Talk Underground.